And the online lenders may not tell you all you need to hear to make the right decision for your company needs. Get the inside edge for business finances. Whether you have capital needs for inventory, payroll, general operating expenses, or even to consolidate expensive debt or tax issues, Corporate Capital Direct can help you avoid common mistakes when seeking a capital solution for your business. Never upfront fees. Get the inside edge for your business financing needs. Call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com. Again, call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com.
Welcome to Legal News and Review. Recipient of the Florida Bar Award of Excellence, and featuring Michael Santucci, co-chair of the Intellectual Property Division of the Broward Bar. From the law firm of Santucci Priori, practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law, with your moderator, Philip Bell, and hosts and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law and a syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his field of practice. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's broadcast, in the Tri-County area of South Florida, which includes Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade, 117 residential towers with over 11,527 units are under construction but will soon be coming up for sale. Construction is the major contributor to the U.S. economy. The industry has more than 650,000 employers with over 6 million employees, but in new construction, there is always issues regarding, of course, construction defects or even delays. And today, we're very pleased to have on board-certified in construction law attorney Daniel Tay Young, who, being board-certified, does make him an expert in construction law. Daniel is from the law office of Daniel Tay Young, PA. First, I'd like to welcome and introduce our legal panel host. Good afternoon, Gary Singer.
Hey, Phil. How you doing this week?
I'm doing good. A little concerned about our legal panel. Gary Yastrow won't be here today, but he will be here next week.
I think you can get him to forgive you.
I think so. You know, you offered to bail him out, but in all seriousness, he's a criminal attorney and
criminal defense attorney.
Not criminal. Well, it's criminal.
It's a different thing.
That's right. And but also for filling in for Michael Santucci is his partner, Joe Priori.
Hey, Phil.
Did I mess up your last name?
Perfect.
Oh, boys.
Wow.
I guess those guys in Nova aren't going to do shots on me.
Not tonight.
Not yet.
Well, I'd like to welcome board-certified construction lawyer from the law office of Daniel Tay, PA, Young. Good afternoon, Daniel.
There's a shot.
Good afternoon, Phil. Thank you very much for inviting me on your show.
It is spelled Gary T-E, but it's pronounced Tay.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. So no one's doing a shot on me today.
Well, you did Daniel Tay, P.A. Young.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm dyslexic.
Daniel, well, what's important is Daniel's a fantastic construction lawyer, but can you tell us, Daniel, how is that different from being a real estate attorney?
That is a good question because I don't know what real estate lawyers do.
Follow me around for a day. I'll show you.
I think, you know, actually, that's a good question because most people think that I know more about real estate law than I actually do.
Surprisingly, they're very different,
well,
right?
Well, absolutely. I think what you do is more transactional. And what I tend to do is after you're done with your work, and if a property is going to be improved, I kind of get involved in that stage.
So the building of the improvements.
The negotiations for the contract. It's also I get involved in licensing, so like soup to nuts for a contractor.
Oh, okay.
I could get involved in the licensing part of it. I could get
Wait,
involved.
Do contractors actually get licensed in South Florida?
They really should be. You got to check that out. That's
it's supposed
certainly,
to, right?
Certainly something that you should check out. I always check that out when I have a client call, if it's an owner and he has a contractor that they have an issue with. I always go to myfloridalicense.com and you
okay,
can check
tip.
That out and make sure they're licensed.
But Daniel, before we actually begin on the issues that you're invited to speak about regarding construction law today, You're also known as an attorney that gives back, or as I call it, the unsung heroes. You know, a lot of attorneys stand in the communities they live, and they donate their time. And I'd like to tell us some of the things in our audience, some of the things in terms of you giving back to the community and, of course, the profession you're so passionate about.
Well, thank you for that, Phil. So important to me and what makes me as a person, I think, are my, in order, my faith, my family, and my work. And then close friends come right after that. But those first three are my priorities. So what that looks like for me is in my faith, I'm active in my church, which is First Baptist Church in downtown Fort Lauderdale. I also serve on the board of Sheridan House Family Ministries, which is a great ministry serving families in West Broward.
Right.
And they're actually right now building a single mom triplex where they're going to try to help single moms who can stay there for lower rent. And then when they can save up some money so they can put a down payment on an apartment when they're done. And relative to my family, what that looks like, I've got three daughters. One of them is here with us today, Madeline. And so.
Is she the oldest?
She is my oldest. Junior at Pompano Beach High and a great student. And so I'm involved in Indian Princess and MI Fathers, and I serve as legal counsel to MI Fathers Inc., which is an offshoot of Indian Princess. And then relative to work, I serve as general counsel to the Underground Contractors Association of South Florida, a trade organization that supports those contractors who we don't really see. They do the stuff underground with water and sewer, all those things that we care about that we don't really see until things go wrong. I also serve
well,
on the board.
Well, I flush the toilet every day, trust
and
me.
And you expect it to do what it's
That's
supposed
right.
to do.
Really, Phil?
I do.
Seriously?
And I serve as on the board of the National Utility and Excavation Contractors Association of Florida for the statewide office. And then also, giving back to the legal profession, I serve as a member of the Florida Bar Construction Law Certification Committee.
Right.
So we're part of that 9-member committee that evaluates applicants and for recertification and initial certification in construction law.
Now, you are board certified in construction law. What does that actually mean again?
What that means, it's the highest level of competence that's awarded by the Florida Bar. And relative to construction law, a certain percentage of a lawyer's practice has to be in construction law, which is 40%. They have to be a member of the bar for 5 years. And then very importantly is there's a peer review process. So they have to get five lawyers, they have to ask five lawyers who can confidentially speak as to that lawyer's practice, that lawyer's professionalism, that lawyer's ethics. And then they also submit other lawyers who might know the lawyer. And really, those are really important to get in terms of the certification.
Now, being board certified, you are an expert. I'm legally allowed to call you an expert on air.
That's
you're not
correct.
Board certified, I can never say that, you know, even
that
if you've been practicing 40 years. And, you know, construction always has some inherent issues that come along with it. Time delays on contracts, those are things that you handle. But for today's conversation, construction defect. And I'm going to ask you, you know, first of all, the statute, that's 558. That's
correct.
Known as, the construction defect law.
Yes.
They now have changed it where you have to have notice. In other words, the contractor, developer, whoever is being, singled out, or maybe as a whole group, depending, we could get into that as we continue. They have to give notice to cure. And first of all, the advantage there is to keep it out of court.
The advantage there, and the initial notice of construction defects typically would come from the owner group who is complaining of the defect.
Mm-hmm.
And what 558 is meant to do is provide an alternative dispute mechanism, if you will, prior to a lawsuit being filed where the owner would give the contractor notice and gives the contractor an opportunity to come and inspect what the alleged defects are. And there's a procedure for offering to fix it or paying a settlement amount or saying, no, that's not a defect. But that procedure is to run its course before the owner can file a claim for a construction defect.
Well, let me ask you, if I'm a contractor and I have insurance that I pay for, Why would I even respond to it? Because the insurance would cover any legal cost or repairs.
Well, so that's a great question. And actually, right now, before the Florida Supreme Court, they are considering whether this 558 notice actually triggers a defense obligation or whether it's the filing of a lawsuit and whether the 558 notice constitute a quote-unquote proceeding. So what I think about your question, though, is a contractor should care when they receive a 558 notice.
Right.
Because their work is being implicated. Maybe it's their subcontractor's work that's being implicated. Maybe it's the supplier. And so also 558 gives the contractor the ability to send that notice to those subs and suppliers who actually did those types of work to also say, you get a right to come and inspect this. We can all go inspect this and see whether it really is a defect or see if it's something that you can fix or see if it can be resolved. But I think the question is, at the end of the day, if there's going to be a lawsuit, I wouldn't want a contractor, I wouldn't want the owner to be able to say, I sent this contractor a 558 notice, and he just blew me off.
He ignored it.
He doesn't care at all. I would not want my contractor client that to be said about them.
So, Daniel, is your practice more with the developers or more with homeowners?
It's actually more with contractors.
Okay.
And subcontractors, depending on where they are in the relationship.
Gotcha. Is this sort of thing going to come up typically, you know, like a new development, or is this like someone just getting an addition put on their house?
It could come up all the time. It can come up for new construction. It can come up with renovations and repairs, and certainly with all of the condos that are coming online that Phil mentioned, you can certainly see them come up with condominium construction as well.
Yeah, well, obviously, when you're dealing with a major developer, it's a different story than if you're just getting some work done in your house. But what are some things that unit owners or homeowners can do when dealing with contractors to avoid this trouble to begin with?
You can do due diligence relative to who your contractor is, which I think is really important. We bought a house a couple years ago, and we were remodeling it. We did an extensive remodel, and so
your daughter's shaking her head like, oh yeah,
it took a long time. But I did a lot of research into who that contractor was. I would make sure they're licensed, but also you can look at the clerk's databases to see if there are any lawsuits relating to this contractor.
Oh.
And then you ask your
friends.
That's
better than Angie List.
I think that it really is. And also asking friends, especially if you've had friends that have hired the same contractor, they did good work and are satisfied with timeliness and those things. To me, I wouldn't hire a contractor out of the blue. I would.
Yeah, clearly not out of the blue. But, asking your friends can be a good idea, but one of the things I found with friends, when you ask your friends, doctors, lawyers, I guess even they don't really know what a good job is necessarily. Yeah, they did great. They settled my, massive injury for $10,000 really quick, So, but besides that, I totally get what you're saying. But I read somewhere that if your contractor doesn't pay a subcontractor, the owner can be responsible, even though they paid the contractor.
That's possible.
That's crazy.
To the lien law, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so to your point, a contractor, an owner, whenever they receive what's called a notice to owner, because a subcontractor or a supplier who doesn't have a direct privity with the owner has an obligation to provide notice to the owner, so the owner knows they're on the job and working and expecting to get paid. So the owner really needs to make sure every party who gives them a notice to owner, they get a release every time they pay the general contractor.
Gotcha. Now, I want to talk some about defects, but I think we're going to take a quick break for some identification, right, Phil?
Yes, we are. You're listening to Legal News and Review, and we're speaking to Daniel Tay Young, who is board certified in construction law, and that makes him an expert as well. Now, primarily, he represents developers, contractors, and those professionals. And the question I have for you that I'm going to leave it off is actually two questions, Daniel. Don't answer it yet. What does a builder's warranty really cover? And will the homeowners association insurance or homeowners association insurance company actually cover damages caused by construction defects? We're going to be right back.
Today's broadcast is brought to you in part by Corporate Capital Direct. Listen. Banks are not lending, and the online lenders may not tell you all you need to hear to make the right decision for your company needs. Get the inside edge for business financing. Whether you have capital needs for inventory, payroll, general operating expenses, or even to consolidate expensive debt or tax issues, Corporate Capital Direct can help you avoid common mistakes when seeking a capital solution for your business. Never upfront fees. Get the inside edge for your business financing needs. Call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com. Again, call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com.
Welcome back to Legal News and Review. Recipient of the Award of Excellence from the Florida Bar, featuring Michael Santucci of the law firm Santucci Priori, practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale. Reach them at 500law.com or 954-351-7474. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go online to belegalbuzz.com. Once again, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
Hi, this is not Philip Bell. It's actually Gary Singer. Philip had to step out for a couple of... No, I'm just kidding. I wanted to bring him back in because I noticed with that second question, Phil, you must have read my article in the Sun Sentinel this week because we did
it
on what...
I read it every week.
We did it on what association law insurance covers versus what individual policies. Not quite construction defects, but very similar. So I wanted to thank... But we have a guest here today. Michael Santucci is not here, Mr. Priori. You want to pipe in and help out?
I did have a question for Daniel. Daniel, under 558, is there an attorney's fees provision?
Is there an
so it's like a prevailing party?
So Chapter 558 is not a claim in and of itself.
Okay.
It's just a mechanism before a claim is filed. Okay. So in a lawsuit that would follow Chapter 558, whether there's an ability to recover attorney's fees would depend on the contract
gotcha.
Between the owner and the contractor or statute or a lien. If it's a lien, for example.
Okay. Does the lien statute allow for attorney's fees or are you just under 57-105 in the contract?
The Chapter 713, the construction lien statute, has a mechanism for the prevailing party to recover attorney's fees. And okay. I only mention that because in my practice – I see a lot of times a 558 notice being, if you will, a response to a lien being recorded and a demand for payment being
interesting.
Made. So
mm-hmm.
when I reference Chapter 713 in the lien, that's the part that I'm thinking about. If there's already been full payment to the contractor and we're just talking about a construction defect claim, so 558 is the mechanism to try to resolve it. Once that's run its course, a lawsuit can be filed, and prevailing party attorney's fees would, in that instance, then depend on whether the contract allows it or not.
So this is really 558 just allow the contractor the ability to try to fix the problem prior to suit. I mean, oversimplifying, obviously.
Well, allowing both parties, or allowing the contractor to show to the owner that it really is not a defect.
Gotcha.
Now, leaving off, I asked you a couple questions, and I know our audience is waiting to hear the answer, especially to this one. What does the builder's warranty really cover, Daniel?
So I think that really goes to the underlying premise of whether the owner is happy with the contractor's work. After payment's done, you get a certificate of completion or certificate of occupancy,
right.
And the owner is then in the house or in the structure and becomes dissatisfied with something about the construction. And so that goes to like what a construction defect is. And a construction defect can be it's defined by statute. It's a deficiency in or arising out of the design or construction or repair that relates to defective materials or products that are in place or design substandard design, or labor, work done in an unworkmanlike manner.
Mm-hmm.
So
to interrupt, so you're saying that the contractor could do everything right, but if he had bad material supplied to him, that can lead to him being sued or her being sued?
Exactly. For example,
wow.
A neighbor. Exactly.
Yeah.
Or one of my neighbors, I live on the water, and one of my neighbors had wood floors installed, and they look beautiful. But then a little bit after construction, I'm not sure how long after construction, within a year or so, mm-hmm. floor started buckling. That's a defect.
A big company have a huge lawsuit about that.
Well,
I was part of that.
So that is a defect. So that would trigger 558.
Who gets sued, Daniel? Is it the contractor that gets sued or the supplier in that case?
So in that case,
good question.
In that case, a lot of it depends on who the owner has the relationship with. I mean, it's possible that he bought the materials directly, and maybe he
gotcha.
Hired the installer. So he could. There are a number of parties that could be brought into something like that. And insurance is a good question for that too, because I think folks incorrectly think that if construction is defective, that insurance would pay for it. But there is, in the typical insurance, an exclusion for the work itself, an exclusion for the subcontractor's work. So if the flooring is defective and it doesn't damage any other work, it's just defective flooring, insurance isn't going to cover that.
Right. But what are some of the most common types of construction defects?
Well, flooring, apparently.
Well, no, flooring.
You know, it really could be anything. It could be anything. I think down here in South Florida, we do see water intrusion.
Oh, yeah.
So that relates to windows, roofs, water coming in.
And when you have water coming in, you get mold.
That's certainly possible if you don't detect it soon
enough.
Now,
is mold a construction defect that can be actionable, or is that more of a damage, a byproduct of the defect? Mold intrusion, I guess, or water intrusion.
It is probably could be the result of defective construction.
Gotcha.
Be it bad workmanship or materials.
So the remediation is going to be part of the damages.
The remediation could be part of the damages, but since mold got more popular as a claim, there is a typical fungus or bacterium exclusion in policies.
Well, let me ask you this, because I've seen some of this more recently, because I don't do construction law, but I do real estate litigation.
Right.
You get an issue, and then they also get you for personal injury caused by your negligence for allowing the mold in. So are your contractors getting sued not only for the defect, but also for the injury that the defect created, the mold poisoning, if you will?
It causes a sick building.
Yeah, I'm seeing that, actually. I'm wondering if you're seeing it, too, in your practice.
My contractors don't do such things.
So usually, they're mold free.
Exactly.
And, I like
and
it.
So usually we're trying to show to the owner that it's not a defect.
So you're doing more like remediating these situations than defending, which is great.
I also defend because the lawsuits
remediate.
Come. But we also prosecute claims as well.
Well, Daniel.
Well, hold on a second. I'm so sorry. Let me just do a quick follow up. What do you mean by prosecute?
Well, in terms of my practice as a construction lawyer,
yeah.
One thing that Phil mentioned in his opening is delays and inefficiencies. So I could see where in construction, I mean, time is money.
Yeah,
time really is money. So if a contractor is on a job longer than they bid to be on the job and are having their staff go and work, and maybe they're doing it inefficiently because of bad plans or another contractor in their way, that costs money, and if it's not their fault, they could have a claim for that. So what I mean in terms of the prosecution.
Against the owner of the other companies.
Well, look at the Broward Courthouse. It was 2.5 years.
Great example.
But, Daniel has focused his practice on construction law since 1999. He's really extensive experience in prosecuting and defending, as we're talking about, all manner of private but also public construction disputes in federal court, state courts throughout Florida. And also before even arbitration panels. I wish we had more time to even delve into that because arbitration is getting more and more into to all contracts.
It's huge.
Absolutely. And Daniel, Daniel Tae Young, but the Tae is spelled T-E.
Correct.
I got more questions. How do I get a hold of you, Daniel?
That's a good question.
You can call me anytime.
All right.
My office is 954-866-3570. And especially let my receptionist know that, that you heard me on
Legal News and Review,
the award-winning radio show.
Yes, we are.
And how would we find you on the web, Daniel?
That's a good question because I'm on LinkedIn, but I haven't needed a website so far.
Oh, cool.
All my cases are by
referral.
So we
just Google you or check you on
LinkedIn.
You can
Google me.
That's a good attorney that doesn't even need a website. I like that.
That's why we have them in all reality.
Phil, we're out of time, my friend.
I know, but he has such a great office. I enjoyed coming to your office. The parking is a real privilege and pleasure there because I don't have to pay for it.
Well, LinkedIn on them. But on that note, we are fully out of time. So I want to thank all of our listeners. I want to thank you. I wish we had more time. I find this very interesting. But in the meantime, folks out there in Radio Land,
be legal!
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, featuring Michael Santucci from the law firm of Santucci Priori, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale, and practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation. They can be reached at 500law.com or at 954-351-7474. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to BeLegalBuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448 for Legal News and Review. Remember, be legal.